Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matter Radio Network. Oh, boy. I don't know. It's been a week, and things are kind of winding down, I guess, for the end of the year. Not a whole lot politically going on. People are focusing on Christmas, getting ready for the holidays. I don't know about you folks. I've got a bunch of vacation days that I've got to burn up before the end of the year, so I plan on that this week. And let me turn the music up here. So the we've got, oh, I don't know, what, 15 days till Christmas? I don't know. It's less than that. 10 days. Wow. This year flew by. I don't know about for you all, but for me, it's right on by. And I guess it's, you know, just another year down, but I've been chatting and talking to people on Facebook and various social circles and whatnot, and, you know, there seems to be general agreement that things aren't really getting better out there. I think one of the interesting trends that I've been kind of following is, and have been following for a while, is the direction of the country, and things are not really getting better. And for the most part, the American people realize that there was a little bit of a bounce back here in the past couple days or whatever, but nothing of real significance. And the thing that concerns me, the thing that I'm really watching, is labor participation rate. And I've been watching that for a while. The labor participation rate, I think, is a real teller of what's going on, and not getting better. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. You know, the recession, if you will, if you want to still call it a recession, started, you know, basically at the end of 2008, and really we started to feel the effects of it right at the end of 2008, and the economy has never really recovered. We started out with about a 66% labor participation rate. It was right around in there. Since then, it's been dropping and dropping consistently, and we're now below 63%. And I think that that's probably more of a true teller of what's going on in the economy than anything. But here I am, I'm getting all serious, and we haven't done this week's random political generator, and I didn't really prepare this either. So, I just randomly generated one here, and so I'll read it. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, when I'm elected, I'll make sure street gangs and tribal warlords can't corrupt our right to exploit cheap overseas labor. Always entertaining to see what comes out of that. And we do have a few other things to talk about tonight. Let's see here. For those who haven't been following it, there was a proposal brought forward by Rand Paul to try to help Detroit. That would be to create economic zones in areas that are economically depressed. And essentially what that does is it makes it so that there is an incentive to start a business there. Usually it's done through tax breaks or whatever. And there can be some limited success. You know, here in Kentucky, we do something very similar. We give tax breaks for companies if they have enough employees or create enough jobs in the area for moving into the state. My concern with these types of policies and these types of programs is that they only really apply to the largest of companies. They don't apply to the smaller companies. And, you know, that's the problem is it's done at the detriment of the small companies. One of the common things I see here in Kentucky is these communities that basically pay Walmart to move in. And when I say pay them to move in, they give them tax abatements and whatnot to make it so that they don't have to pay taxes for a number of years. And, you know, on top of the fact that Walmart does have the benefit of economies of scale, where they can they do large purchases, and so they can bring products cheaper to the consumer. They're also getting a tax break compared to their neighbors, the folks who were already established in the area. And the end result of that is that the small companies, the mom-and-pop folks, end up paying the taxes. And if you understand how Kentucky taxes work, they essentially, it's a formula, and it's a very, I don't want to get into the big, long story on how that works, but essentially it's a formula that works out that the certain amount of money is going to come out of the community no matter what. And they can raise that by a certain percentage. But it is a government-centric formula. In other words, it ensures that government always gets the revenue that they're expecting, regardless of how the community is doing. So if the community is depressed, they're going to pull even more money out of the local community to continue to fund government. And I guess that's kind of what I wanted to talk about tonight in general, is how much government do we want? And I had kind of a thought on this tonight as I was preparing for the show. Some of you who listen, and for those that don't, you'll know soon, some of those who listen know that I drive around a little early 90s Mazda. And why do I do that? Because they're relatively cheap. They get about 30 miles a gallon, maybe a little less. And, you know, the cost per mile as far as maintaining them or whatnot is pretty low. And so basically I've built this giant spreadsheet and I did all this math to basically find the lowest cost per mile for vehicles and potential other options and whatnot. And by far, driving around my little Mazda is the best total cost of ownership available. It's entertaining because my former boss's boss used to, you know, joke with me kind of and say, hey, you know, why do you drive that old car? Why don't you get a nicer car? And at the end of it all, it's basically that I don't want a nicer car. I look at vehicles as a tool to go from point A to point B. I don't use them as a status symbol or view them as such. I know that other people do, but I don't. And so I guess the point is that I don't want to have a new car. I mean, I'd love to have one. Make no mistake, just before the show, I was in a conversation with folks on Facebook and talking about the cars we drive, and one of the folks brought up the Taurus, and I went out and looked at the Taurus because it was a very popular car at one time, and, you know, quite honestly, the 2013 Taurus looks like a beautiful car. I really like how it looks. You know, gets decent gas mileage, whatever. But at the end of the day, I still can't justify going out and buying a brand new car when I look at it from my perspective, which is I look at a car as a tool to get from point A to point B. And for those of you that know me a little better than others, you know that I drive a lot, a whole lot. And so fuel mileage is a big factor, but it's really just in general maintenance and total cost of ownership. I tear through cars. And so one of the things that I'm doing with my vacation days here at the end of the year is I've got my current Mazda, and I went out and recently purchased two others. And between the three of them, I will be parting them together to create two and then taking the leftover parts to the scrapyard, whatever I decide not to keep. And that is going to be the most efficient dollar-wise use of my money as far as transportation from point A to point B. That's just how I am. That's the way I am. I don't, like I said, I don't look at driving a vehicle as a status symbol. Now, certainly I want it to look nice. I don't want to be driving around, you know, a beat-up old car. You know, my car isn't all beat up, although right now it's kind of beat up. A deer jumped out in front of me, but that's another story. The point is that when I'm done, I'll end up with two vehicles that look nice, that run well, and the total cost of ownership will be significantly lower. And I guess that's where it comes into the question of efficiency and do we really need the super shiny nice things? You know, here in Kentucky, and we've talked about this on the show in the past, you have these libraries that have been building these Taj Mahal buildings. I mean, they're just, I mean, they're gorgeous buildings. Make no mistake. I think they're great architecture. I have nothing negative to say about how they look. My question is, do you really need a library that has that level of detail, that has that design and architecture and the associated price tag? Do you need these brand new buildings to house books? Do you need these brand new buildings to provide an internet place to use the internet? I would say no, you don't. I believe that if government is to provide a service, that it should be baseline, it should be basic, and it should be focused on the actual service it's supposed to be providing. In Boone County, they have a library where they're literally, you know, farming out space to people to open up a coffee shop and cafe inside of the library. What? I mean, that's, I don't know, maybe, and hey, you know what? Maybe that model actually pays for the library and keeps the taxes low. I mean, if it does, but if this is not an offsetting cost, if this is not something that helps pay for the library, then it's an extra nicety that doesn't do anything to enhance the service providing of books or an internet connection, which is what the library is now for. I think that's really the fundamental question. You know, we've also seen a lot of communities throughout the state have these new courthouses that were built over the past decade. And the question is, did we really need to spend $10 to $15 million on new courthouses, on new judicial centers? Because the reality is, the average public tries to stay out of the judicial center. They try to stay out of the courthouse. They try to stay out of government buildings entirely. People don't wake up in the morning and go, man, I hope I get to go to the courthouse today. Providing basic services is going to be there, right? I mean, there's going to be courts. There's going to be basic bureaucracies. There's going to be basic agencies that are going to need office space. Great. But when it comes to taxpayer dollars, was it really necessary to spend $10 to $15 million on these new judicial centers? I would venture to say that it was not. Another good question is, hey, maybe there was a better use of that money. Anyone consider the fact that, oh, by the way, our state pension's broke? Maybe that money should have been plowed into the state pension. I mean, over the course of a decade, dropping $10 million into 120 counties, that's a lot of money. That's a whole lot of money. Wouldn't it have been better to put that money into the obligations we've already given ourselves? And I understand that a lot of this is bonded out as well, and that not all of it was actually paid for. I mean, that's part of this, too, is they've built these monstrous buildings, and now there's, you know, a 30-year bond that or loan that's going to be paid off over time for these buildings. But wouldn't it have been smarter, instead of committing that capital to government buildings, instead use that capital to pay off what we've already committed to? Or, hey, let's throw it into the road fund and improve some roads. There's, you know, the Cumberland Parkway is like 60 miles short of actually being a highway that's useful. Maybe we should finish that. I just get a little frustrated, to say the least, when I see government spending money on things that, in the end, are basically frivolous. It's my opinion that government should not be providing the super nice stuff in life. Government should be bare necessities. It should be very basic things that can be doled out evenly, right? So it treats all people the same. And it has to be with the understanding that that money came from the community or the county or the state or the country, whatever. And would it have been better to keep that money in the pockets of the taxpayers? Or would it have been better to put that money into some other thing that we've already created debt and are obliged to pay for? Generally, it's not a good idea when you have a lot of debt to go out and generate more debt. That's generally a bad idea. And I have a very serious concern that a lot of people just don't even understand how much money is being spent in their name, how much money is being committed to being spent in their name over the course of the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years. It's a lot of money. It's a whole lot of money. Meanwhile, the regulatory state continues to grow and grow and grow. And, of course, all those regulations, all those little nuances, oh, they may be nice for, I mean, let's see, it's even for a majority of the population. Well, we want to regulate this and stop that and ban this and discourage that. But all of those things have economic consequences. And the consequences are things as simple as, well, you got to pay these regulators, these enforcement agencies, to enforce these laws. And then the other side is the lost opportunity, or the opportunity cost in economic terms, where instead of money being spent on something that may have generated economic activity, we've instead spent it on preventing economic activity, even if it's a minority behavior in a niche market. Niche markets are really important. That's what a lot of people don't realize. And I think that's kind of a big part of this and kind of tying back to where we started here. Niche markets are important. It's one of the cool things about the free market. If you want to have a controlled economy that always caters to just the minority, that works great until you're in a group that is the minority. And then all of a sudden, it's not so hot. All of a sudden, what you want isn't allowed or is strongly discouraged through ridiculous taxation. We shouldn't be looking to government for control of any market or really any behavior at all that involves voluntary participation. As long as all participants are participating voluntarily, then the government really should have no say in these activities. Nor should they be taking a bunch of money to prevent, or charging a bunch of money in order to try to prevent people from engaging in those voluntary activities. There's a poll out. The guys at Reason Magazine ran a Reason Rupe poll, and a big part of the poll talked about Americans who oppose or support bans on particular things. And, you know, it's pretty interesting, the results. 21% of Americans support banning caffeinated energy drinks. 76% do not support such a ban. 24% support a ban on buying foods with trans fats. 71% do not support that ban. 31% of Americans support banning playing violent video games. 66% do not. 2% support banning gambling in online poker rooms. only and 65% do not support that ban. One here close to home, because they've, of course, come back around, the smoking ban nannies have been adding in these e-cigarette bans to their public smoking bans, usually through regulation, and here's why. Only 34% of Americans support a ban on the use of e-cigarettes, the electronic cigarettes, in public places. 62% do not support that ban. One here that made recent news, I think we talked about this last week, was the, or maybe the week before, 37% of Americans support a ban on being able to buy a genetic testing kit. That was the whole, can you go out and do your own testing on your own genetics to find out if you're susceptible to certain diseases or what your genetic heritage is or whatever. By the way, if you missed that show, the FDA has banned the ability to do that. Right now, there was a company that was doing it for $99, and they'd tell you all kinds of good stuff. But that's been banned because they're claiming that it's a medical device, and that it applies to the medical device tax and the regulations therein, courtesy of Obamacare and, you know, previous laws as well. But it's now banned. Even though 37% of Americans, only 37%, support a ban, and 55% of Americans do not support a ban on such tests, they were able to do it through regulation, you see. Because, in theory anyway, we've empowered these regulators to create their own regulations that were never intended. We talked about that numerous times on this show, that the regulatory agencies go overboard. The only thing they asked about in the survey that actually did have popular support for a ban. 60% of Americans support a ban on the ability to make a working gun with a 3D printer. 30% of Americans do not support such a ban. So that's the only one of these issues that have been around and are always kicked around, and certain people, certain groups try to push their agenda. And this is Republicans and Democrats, by the way. The only one that's got any support whatsoever is the ban on being able to print yourself up a 3D printer gun, or print a gun from a 3D printer. The majority of the American public wants you to be able to buy a caffeinated energy drink, to buy foods with trans fats, to play a violent video game, to gamble in an online poker room, to be able to use e-cigarettes in a public place, and to be able to get your own genetics tested. The majority of Americans support your right to do all those things. Yet today, New York is working on the trans fat bans again. There's always the call to ban the violent video games. The Republicans banned online poker back in the 2000s. Thanks a lot, guys. The e-cigarette stuff is being pushed by the left and the right and all kinds of different people. The genetic testing kits, I don't even understand why they've made an issue out of this, but they have. I'm assuming it's just to get their cut, their pound of flesh out of these companies to try to, you know, try to get more tax money and regulatory money out of them. I just don't see, you know, and the whole making a 3D gun thing, I don't even see how you can stop that. Ironically, of all those things, that's going to be the hardest one to actually stop, is the one that has popular support. And I guess the point is this, that if we had a government that was focused on providing core services, and at the local level especially, you know, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I'm not an anarchist. I do believe that there's a role for government in a basic sense. But that's to provide very basic common goods, things that would be monopolies otherwise and therefore may not serve the public because they are monopoly. And they're a monopoly, they're known as natural monopolies. They're a monopoly due to resource limitations. So, you know, sewer companies and water companies and electric companies and phone companies. It's not reasonable to run three or four sewer lines down the same street. It's not reasonable to have a whole bunch of electric companies or a whole bunch of traditional phone companies or there's just a geographic limitation on that stuff. Now, certainly, technology can help resolve a lot of that. We see that with telephones, certainly. And we also see people, you know, generating their own power now, and that's cool. But the point is that government is to serve a purpose, that it should be to serve at the very basic levels, the very core of what's necessary for society. And that would keep costs low, and it would keep government focused on those few things, and they would do them really well. Well, I think they do them better than they are today. I won't go so far as to say that they would do them well, but I think they would do them better than they do them today. If they were focused on those core resources and not providing, you know, the five-star hotel version of those resources, but the three-star hotel or the, you know, the it gets the job done level. We don't need roads paved in gold. We just need roads that are paved. We don't need ridiculous levels of service. We need basic levels of service that the community actually wants to pay for, and it should be kept local as absolutely possible, so that, hey, you know what, maybe there's a community that, I don't know, they don't want fresh water run to their homes. Okay. You don't want city water? That's cool. The whole city doesn't want street water? That's cool. Then don't. And that's why I think those kind of decisions are best made locally. It's just frustrating. We spend a lot of money on a lot of things that are very frivolous. Very, very frivolous. And we can argue the merits of certain things. I mean, certainly some of my more anarchist friends would say that the government shouldn't do any of those things. It's a free market can provide for all of them. Yeah, kind of. And some of my more pro-state friends would say, well, you know, hey, there's all this other stuff the government can do too. And boy, you know, wouldn't it be nice to raise the basic level of living to these higher standards? But I would submit that the more money you take out of a community, the more you hurt that community's ability to survive on its own and to grow on its own. And so there's a balancing act. I don't think people want no government. I mean, yeah, I know some of my friends out there are anarchists and they want nothing. Okay, that's fine. You can, you know, whatever. I really don't see that ever happening. I think that's one of those utopian ideals that are literally impossible to maintain. There has to be some sort of rules to protect basic rights, right? The most basic of things have to be protected somehow. But we don't need to be building Taj Mahals for libraries or Taj Mahals for courthouses. We don't need to have government providing all these crazy services, and we certainly don't need government in regulating and nanny-stating every freaking decision in our lives. So I guess the point is that I get often get accused of being an anarchist, and I am not an anarchist. I think there are very important roles for government. Personally, I think the number one role for government is providing a means by which two parties who can't otherwise agree to be able to get a final arbiter, someone who is able to make a decision one way or the other and say, this is the final decision on this matter. Done. That's our court system. And in theory, if our courts were not clogged up with silly things, there would be a whole lot more focus on arbitration and a whole lot more focus on resolving disputes. And our courts would cost a whole lot less because there'd be fewer people rotating through with, you know, stupid offenses, things that hurt no one, did nothing, but are technically against the law, and people have to get drug in front of a judge in order to have them be sentenced to pay money or whatever. I think there is a role for government, but the role is small, and it should be focused on providing basic levels of service. That's the key. Again, we don't need roads paved in gold. We just need roads that are paved. With that, folks, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a slightly extended break here. I need to refill my coffee. But you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And if you'd like to call in, by the way, on anything I've talked about so far tonight or anything else on your mind after the break, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. We'll be back here in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Thank you. First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on My View Matters Radio Network. It's Sunday night. We are here every Sunday night, usually live, from at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you're listening to us on podcast, while we certainly appreciate that, we would prefer you listen live and call in if you're so inclined to do so when we're talking about a topic. And you can do that if you're listening live tonight at area code 858-683-1326. But, you know, for your friends that missed the show, you can always catch it on podcast, and we appreciate our podcast listeners too. So getting back to it here, and we've got about 20 minutes left in the show. One of the things that's kind of going on is the Mega Millions prize. It's over $500 million now, over $500 million prize in the Mega Millions. And I had some friends of mine at one time talk to me about the odds, and it's all about, you know, an odds game and risk reward. And apparently it's $500 million. It's worth going out and spending $1 or $2 for the potential to make $500 million. Essentially, your odds of winning are still bad, right? I mean, they're still just one in whatever the heck it is, ridiculous amount. But at $500 million potential upside, the $2 you invest or spend is apparently worth it. So that's what I was told. So if by chance you go out and you buy a Mega Millions ticket because I said, hey, you know, your risk reward is there and you should, you know, spend $2. And if you win the big prize, send, you know, just send 10 grand my way or whatever, right? I mean, I'm not asking for much. I mean, what's 10 grand when you get $500 million? But seriously, though, I thought that was an interesting thing whenever the lottery gets over $500,000, and I never play the lottery. I mean, it's you're going to lose. Let's just put it that way. You're going to lose. But if you didn't, like I said, you want to send some money my way, I'm not going to complain. But, you know, if you've got $2 laying around and you don't need it to eat, you don't need it for any, you know, actual core bills, you've got $2 laying around, it's probably not a bad idea, based on my friends who do odds making and that kind of thing, to go ahead and invest $2 in the lottery. And if you lose, you lose. You know, just expect to lose the $2, but or $1 or $2, whatever it costs. I don't even know what it costs anymore to buy a lottery ticket. But expect to lose it, but the risk-reward ratio is there that, you know, you're spending $2 at a chance to get $500 million. That's pretty significant. Let's see, some other miscellaneous things here. Oh, we were talking about polls before the break. One of the other polls that came out here recently was a poll that showed that 50% of Americans oppose allowing cell phone calls during airline flight. 45% favor it. And I have to think that one of the big – the reason this has come up is the FAA is basically looking at allowing people to use their cell phones on airline flights. And, you know, quite honestly, I don't know how I feel about it as far as would I want to be on the plane with a guy next to me chatting away on the phone the entire time? Probably not. Do I want to be on a plane with a whole bunch of people on the phone? Probably not. But that said, I think it's something the free market can figure out. I think it's – I mean, it could even be to the point where airlines, if they have the capacity or the need to have multiple flights to a destination per day, could offer one as a – you know, one allows cell phones and one doesn't. I mean, you've got 45% in favor of allowing it, 50% in opposition. And that's probably about the breakdown of who would use a phone. Although – it would be interesting to actually do a poll of people who actually fly rather than just generic Americans because, you know, the people who fly are the consumers. And, again, I think that that's another very good reason why the government, the FAA, the FCC, whoever, shouldn't be the ones making that decision. It should be the airlines getting feedback from their consumers on whether or not to offer such things. And if it is really that divided, if it's really a 50-50 thing, then, you know, they want to do all talking flights and all non-talking or whatever, you know what I mean? It's kind of whatever they want to do. It's their airline, and you're the consumer, so buy what you want. And really at the end of the day, you know, yeah, it might be annoying to sit next to somebody who's on the phone nonstop throughout a call or throughout a flight. But the other thing you can do is you can always put a pair of earplugs in. They have those available on the plane, usually for free, or at least they used to. I haven't flown for a while. You know, there's always earmuffs. There's, you know, whatever. You know, you can always deaden the sound pretty easily. And I think that that's something that, in the end, really needs to be decided by the airlines and their consumers and doesn't need government to be involved in that decision. Speaking of silly or this isn't really silly, but strange government decisions. Saw an article this week about North Korea. There was the leader of North Korea, well, I guess the Communist Party in Korea, I don't know who exactly is really in charge there, but whoever's in charge, they put one of the, who's this now, Kim Jong-un, or I don't even remember which Kim Jong-il or which Kim Jong is in charge these days, but this guy's uncle was put to death for acts of treachery, and North Korea is now going out and trying to purge every bit of evidence that this guy ever existed, and apparently this is a pretty typical thing for communist regimes, and there were some interesting things on Facebook this week, you know, pictures that were retouched with Stalin. After Stalin had had people killed, he'd have them erased from pictures, which was interesting. Apparently, in communist countries, not only are you, you know, put to death or executed for your quote-unquote treachery, but you're also erased from ever existing in history, or at least they attempt to erase you from ever existing. Kind of interesting, but whatever. I just think it's funny, and basically they're having trouble erasing this guy because, you know, there's this thing called the Internet, and the Internet, like, stores a bunch of information forever. And I thought that was kind of funny that they're going to have to start moving away from that. And apparently regimes like China have moved away from it, probably in part because of that, that you can't ever really erase people from existing. Not anymore. Let's see here in Florida, there was a Marine vet and actually he's a police officer as well. He went to an anti-Obamacare rally, and at the rally wore the anonymous mask, the V for Vendetta mask, the, you know, Guy Fawkes mask is what they're usually referred to as. And at the rally, another police officer asked him to remove his mask. And the officer, the gentleman who was wearing the mask, who himself was a police officer as well, politely declined, said it was his right to not have to remove the mask, and he was arrested. And as a result, it'll be interesting to see what happens here, but it's setting up a case. Basically, there's a law on the books in Florida that was originally meant to fight the Ku Klux Klan, which prevents people from hiding their faces while trying to, you know, basically intimidate people. That was why the law exists, was to prevent the Klan from it being able to intimidate people and do so anonymously. But now that law is being applied to a peaceful protest about Obamacare. And so I think that that's an interesting situation, an interesting scenario. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out in court. I don't know. I personally have no problem with it at all. I mean, unless the police had some sort of suspicion that he was about to, you know, do something horrible, unless he's an imminent threat, I don't see any justification for the police to be harassing him. I mean, you can wear whatever you want in public. You can, you know, wear a hoodie that covers too much of your face. I mean, where's the line drawn on this? Is it that you wear a hoodie sweatshirt and it's drawn down too far, can't see enough of your face? You know, I have, as I said, serious concerns about where things are going and these laws that have been sitting on the books for years and years and years are now being applied in new ways. And we've talked about this on the show before. These old laws are being applied in new ways. And what's interesting is that Supreme Court cases that we've won to protect our rights, for whatever reason, aren't being applied to these modern-day scenarios, even though it's logistically the same thing. You know, spying on our internet connections and spying on us, the people. You know, there were wiretap laws and there were Supreme Court, you know, rulings that protected our privacy, but somehow now, for some reason, those same rulings don't apply to the modern-day equivalent. It's like, wait, why? It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Anyway, another poll, you know, Obamacare, still getting worse, always getting worse. More and more people, you know, are saying they're not going to use, or they're not going to sign up for insurance. And, of course, there's always the numbers. And no matter how nice of a spin they try to put on the Obamacare stuff, the number of people losing coverage is way, way more than the number of people who are going to sign up. Way, way more. You know, it's just, let's see here. This poll, so about 75%, more than 75% say that the rollout has gone poorly, which I don't know where the other 20 to 30% are, but they must be living on the moon because that rollout was absolutely horrible. It is politically charged, of course, still politically charged. 85% of Americans, boy, let's see here. And people are blaming all the changes in their job coverage, right or wrong. They're blaming the changes of their health coverage on Obamacare, so the increase in cost, having to switch plans, that kind of stuff. And I think in part that's true, and I think there are probably other instances that people are just making excuses just because they can. But 77% of Americans blame their changes on Obamacare. 69% say their premiums are going up. 59% say their annual deductibles or copays are going up. I mean, this is, it's not good. Everybody's pet costs are going up, and right or wrong, people are blaming Obamacare for it. And it's definitely going to make the midterm elections very interesting. And I have a strong suspicion that Obama is going to be completely lame-ducked after the midterm. I don't see the Republicans losing ground, despite the fact that a lot of what they run on, and we're going to get to this in a minute, the dissension within the Republican Party, I really don't see a lot of change in the House of Representatives I don't see the Democrats certainly not gaining any seats. I just don't see that happening, barring some other unforeseen thing that hasn't happened yet. I don't see any way the Democrats pick up seats at this point. And so it's going to be interesting, very, very interesting, but I don't see it. Another poll that came out, speaking of things that aren't good for Democrats, 63% of Americans say stricter gun controls won't criminals from getting guns. And that's pretty much true. I mean, the old saying that once guns are illegal, only criminals will have guns has been true in most countries where they have guns. Now, certainly there's registration and whatnot, so they have these databases of who's got what guns. But in the end, there will still be guns, even if they banned every gun tomorrow and they went around and picked up every gun that they knew about. Guns would still be out there. There would still be guns floating about. There's not a lot you can do to stop a bad guy from being a bad guy, and there's not a whole lot you can do to have, you know, crazy people be less crazy. And, the breakdown's pretty straightforward, and what's really amazing is that 52% of Democrats actually say that stricter gun control laws won't prevent criminals from getting guns. 52%, over half of Democrats themselves, who, you know, most of the gun control push comes from Democrats, which is why I bring that up, not because I'm beating up on Democrats, but that's where the calls for it come from. Over half their constituency says that more gun control is not going to solve the problem. And I think that that's very interesting. And moving into that same thing of talking about what's a better way to stop these shootings, these school shootings and whatnot, poll was done, and the options that were given were better mental health treatment was probably the one that had it did have the highest response. 31% of independents believe that better mental health treatment would help reduce gun violence or tragedies like Newtown. That's actually what they asked. 26% of Republicans agreed and 23% of Democrats agreed, which is, I think, kind of interesting that Democrats are saying that even better mental health, well, as a percentage, well, whatever. I'm part of the 31%, I guess, of the quote-unquote independents that I really think mental health will help a whole lot, that, you know, you actually get people some help and put it out there. And, you know, everybody knows this Newtown shooting, that the kid had problems. I think that that would help. I think that would be a step in the right direction for sure. It's not going to be a cure-all. It's not going to be the final answer. What's interesting about this poll, more than anything, is that when it comes to the Newtown tragedy, how out of step Democrats are with independents. For the most part, the independents are either in line with or a more extreme version of the Republican position, with the exception. So there's an exception here. So 31% of independents think better mental health, only 26% of Republicans, 23% of Democrats. Stricter gun control, 10% of Republicans, 12% of independents, and 24% of Democrats. So more than double the number of Republicans. Democrats think stricter gun control would have helped. Better parenting is always right in the middle. And you know what? I don't know if that's really the case. That's all kind of clumped together there, but I don't think that that's really necessarily the cause. The one that's interesting is the armed guards in schools. That was the one that the Republicans were really pushing. And what's interesting about that is that 25% of Republicans believe that armed guards in the schools would have helped, but only 19% of Democrats and only 18% of independents. So in that scenario, the independents are aligning with Democrats. And I think that that's really the key here, right, is that nobody talked about better mental health. Democrats were out of step in saying that they wanted stronger gun control. And Republicans were out of step saying that they wanted armed guards in the school, when in reality, the thing that had the most support, which was better mental health, neither the Democrats nor Republicans were really pushing it. And I think that just goes to show how deaf the Democrat and Republican parties as parties actually are. That's what led to things like the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street, because the parties are deaf to the American public. I'm going to end on this tonight. I assume everybody saw the story about John Boehner turning on the Tea Party. And Boehner basically calling them out and saying they're idiots and that he's not going to listen to them anymore. That's very interesting. This all kind of culminated with the Ryan budget deal that just went down with the continuing resolution. And the interesting part of it is that Boehner went for it, and here in the state where McConnell faces a tough primary, in Kentucky, McConnell went against it, even though all the other Republicans in the House in the state went for it, except for Thomas Massie. So you had basically Thomas Massie and Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul voted against it. The other five, well, I'm sorry, I don't know what Yarmouth did. The other four Republicans voted for it, which means that technically McConnell wanted to do it, but he just couldn't. But Boehner's now taking it and going on the attack, going on the offensive, attacking the Tea Party. And the reality is people are sick of the politics as usual. Again, I really think the Republican Party is really suicidally stupid for alienating their base. And the way they solve that? By cranking down ballot access restrictions, which is what's happening in Ohio. Kasich made some terrible moves, shook his base loose, and as soon as the Libertarian candidate declares, all of a sudden they put forth a law to make it way harder for a Libertarian to get on the ballot. That should be no surprise. Wow, that's loud. There we go. But, folks, we're out of time for the week. I thank you all for tuning in. Tune in again next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Tune in Monday through Thursday for other shows on the network at the same time, 7 p.m. Folks, have a good week. We'll see you next week. Take care.